Today is 3rd September 2018. We're interviewing Tony and Liz Morrison about the life and times of their families in Motio and other environs. Tony, would you like to tell us something about your family?
Well, I was born 39, just the year of the war, in Napier, and we moved to Swamp Road for 9 years. My parents came from Tiko and Onga. My father was a drover. By the time he was 21 or 2, he built and owned the butcher shop in Tikakino and was one of the first butchers to have a delivery round Onga, Waipawa, Waipakarau, with two overland butcher's vans, which were pretty new in those days. My mother worked for the Brassingtons there. She came from Fielding. It was a large family, 11 children, I think. And her father was a wool buyer in Fielding. After my father had a shearing gang, a fencing gang, and they split all their own posts and battens and cleared the lines and the wakararas, he became a butcher and then a shepherd, and became droving and shepherding and came to work for the Kellys in Swamp Road in 1939, where I was born. Five of us in the family, two girls and three boys. We all started going to Fernhill School. My sister went to one of the schools in Havelock, I think, later, and became a nurse in Palmerston North, married an airline pilot, and still alive in Auckland. My other brother, Brian, joined the Air Force after school, spent 38 years in the Air Force, and then did a pressure cooker course on education and became a school teacher in the town he was living in, Blenheim. And he is still alive. And my other brother was a builder. My younger sister married a doctor in Auckland, still alive and doing well. And I stayed in Puketap driving tractors when I was about 14 and 15, working for the local contractor and various farmers that were just getting into Ferguson tractors and things about 49, 50, 51. Seemed to have a life driving tractors, and I bought a hay mower shortly after. Bought the baling business out a year or two later and did that for 20 odd years. Then my father bought my brother and I a grass seed stripper, which was a very, very old machine. And my brother and I towed it around with a Ferguson tractor, and it beat all the seed on various times of the year. And we beat all the paddocks around it. All the farmers didn't mind us doing it. And we'd hang all the seed in bags along the fence to dry for a month, and then during the winter we'd harvest it all. So that's how I got into contracting and threshing seeds, and I did that for several years.
Tony, that's something a lot of people have never ever seen or heard of being done, stripping, because it was widely done throughout New Zealand, mainly by horse-drawn.
Yes, this was a horse-drawn machine, yeah. But we pulled it with a Ferguson. But it had steel wheels. It was a very old machine, and it had hardwood beaters. And to clean it out was a filthy process. And because all the paddocks were covered in thistle stuff, that was all beaten in with the seed and that. And to bag it all up was not a very pleasant job. And the greatest idea of just hanging it on the fence in the sun, and it would turn a shower of rain, and you'd probably have two or three bushels in each bag, and within a few weeks it was as dry as a bone and required no further drying. And it was threshed on an hourly basis. Arthur Orwell was the contractor, and we could do a massive amount of seed in one day, so it was a cheap process.
Was this Arthur Orwell from Clive?
Arthur was in William Street in Hastings.
Yes, that's right.
And I remember the contractors. Walter Cooper, a Maori contractor, did all the hay baling down Swamp Road, wire tied press. The press stayed in the corner of the paddock, and they used old Model A trucks as sweepers to bring the hay over, and it was pitchforked into the baler, and that was the way it was done. Manny Bergren was a contractor that arrived with a self-towed threshing mill, and they threshed the paddock down at Potters. Towing this machine round seemed to be a modern way of doing it, and that's the first toad thrashing mill that I ever saw.
That would have been an old Sunshine or McCormick Deering, probably.
Yeah, it would have been. After that, at 19, I did a quick 3-month stint across to Australia and drove a fair portion of Australia in a little Morris Minor car that I'd bought and took it over in the Wanganella. And I learned a lot of the ways of life in Australia. I stayed with the Australasian manager, Dal Geddes, Mr. Bennett, and his wife that I'd met through their daughter, and they treated me like a king. So I lived in Sydney for 2 or 3 months with them, doing day trips around, and travelled north up the Armidale Road and spent a lot of time crossing rivers. There was no bridges and a lot of things in those days. And then I came back and started cropping. I'd lease a bit of land and share cropping. Because I had a thrashing mill, the likes of the Lowrys and that, very keen to do a crop of barley and go halves and seed. So that's how I got going. And I bought a block of windswept, flooded land up Bodio Road in about 1969 and started levelling it. And when the two cities of Tamatea and Flaxmere were being developed, one on the riverbed and one on the seabed, everybody had to buy 2 or 3 truckloads of this stuff to get gardening. And I sold 750,000 yards, it was, in 15 years, and carted it all to town. And it was also the base of hot mix, tar sealing. Yes. And I used to sell thousands of metres to the local asphalting company. And that gave me a real boost in life, and I got going pretty well. And I bought 100 acres over the road and then started developing orchards down the Swamp Road. I bought 3 or 4 or 5 of the dairy farms and developed into apple orchards and various things. When the silt was all levelled, we subdivided into 3 blocks and sold it to developers that wanted to get into grapes. So that was my... I bought land by the acre and sold it by the truckload. And that was a, I got cropping for a few years, leased a big place down next to Kinross White's, 120 acres, and we grew leeks, peas, various crops over the years. And then when that lease was run up, I bought the levelling block at Motio, another block over the road, and we started planting apples about 1979-1980. And we planted, close planting apples was the way to go, and trellised, sort of held up on wires, and we did about 100 acres of apples. And I became, I think, the 12th biggest supplier to the board in New Zealand within 3 or 4 years of my starting the business. Apples, I never got much fun growing apples. I bought a property down the road, a hill with a bit of flat, and we did a subdivision there, which I've just finished. Sold the last section a couple of months ago. Planted a lot of beautiful trees. It's a pleasure to go down and see cherry trees up the roads, and it's as good as you get, and we're very proud of that. And I just stay on my 4 acres where my house is, Motio Road, which I've been for 40 years. Built the house and sort of live in semi-retirement.
That's what you tell me.
Yeah.
When I look around, it's not too much semi-retirement.
Right.
You fly simulated aircraft and helicopters several hours a day, you said.
Yes.
For a hobby.
Yes.
Anywhere in the world. And there's probably a few other things now. We better go back to when you were a young man and you learnt to fly at East Coast Aero Club. You said Ken Parrish taught you. That's a long time ago.
Yes, my flying career started, I was always fascinated with aeroplanes, and when I was about 16 or 17, a friend of mine, Chris Pask, started top dressing, and I used to give him a hand driving the loader, fixing old loaders and stuff. We didn't have very good gear. And then I started flying myself, and I think I nearly held the record at Bridge Power. I decided to get my licence, so I devoted 3 months to flying, and I think I had my licence in about 3 months after I started flying, which was an absolute record. And I started in the winter time driving loaders for all the 7 or 8 top dressing companies around the district, and I was qualified to load the planes So I did all the holiday times at the others, and so I worked for many of the publishing people, and I was able to fly the aeroplanes to Hamilton or Palmerston for repairs. So I was always flying an aeroplane that had a blown gasket or leaking oil or something else seriously wrong with it. So you always had your ear on the engine and what was going to go wrong, but I did several years flying and gave that up when my children were sort of heading to high school, to private school, my daughter, and flying became a thing of the past for a while. And then many years later I decided to buy a flight simulator that I'd seen, and now I'm engrossed in flying helicopters, airliners. I can fly about 50 airliners, and I spent many, many hours sitting in the simulator doing that, whereas I didn't have a computer in my office until my office lady just about walked out, because we didn't have one. So that was the first computer that I had, and so I've had to learn the computer age pretty quickly too for flying.
Jim Frogley, old Jim Frogley, and Jock McKenzie.
Jock McKenzie. Going back to the top dressing days, Jock McKenzie was flying a Tiger Moth for old Jim Frogley, and licensing wasn't always up to scratch. Jim Frogley flew for years without a license, but they were characters and they did a lot of the top dressing in the immediate, from here to Puketetri and around, I suppose. Then Chris Pass bought Jim Frogley's business out and continued it for many years. I was almost going to take a career on flying. I'd got my license and towing gliders, and I was always flying something. And the local top dressing pilots, several of them which were Second World War pilots, told me I was absolutely crazy. Stick to what I knew, driving tractors, I was safer. And so I did. And then after I'd got in planting orchards about the early 90s, I sold an orchard and it gave me an opportunity to get into dairy farming. So I bought into a dairy farm in Fielding at Cheltenham, the biggest dairy farm in the country. Gordon Black, the accountant in the Hastings, advised me this was the way to go. So we bought a quarter share each, and I spent several good years learning the dairy business. We bought a couple of farms next door and converted and did another shed. Then when we got to capacity, we thought we'd buy a development farm. We bought Long Row in Ongar. It was a 1,400-acre farm, been run by trustees in England for many years, run down, beautiful property, just in the rain belt back from the main Tikau-Ongar Highway, about 5 miles towards the hills. And we developed that within 3 or 4 months. We'd done 600 acres of new pasture, cut all the trees, 70 kilometres of roading, and we had one of the partners was Peter Barry, and he was just a brilliant man at dairy farming, and he became one of the biggest dairy farmers in the country before an accident killed him. But he was the inspiration behind what I was doing, and there was about a dozen people in our investment portfolio by the time I sold my shares. But it was a very interesting period of time again. And
I didn't know you then. Dairy farmer too.
Well, there's a funny thing that farmers down here, when I was a teenager, I used to milk the cows for two or three of the dairy farmers here because I'd be driving their tractor. So I'd help them if the husband was away. And so that's the old-fashioned way of learning the dairy business. When I got into it with these people, everybody was a professional. And we had people, the agronomists, we had grass people, fertiliser. I learned how to make a dairy farm really produce. And we got up to about 630,000 kilos at our peak. That's when I got out of it. So then, just before that, I started an importing business, bringing diesel engines mainly from Japan, and tyres and wheels and everything, because a lot of people were converting from petrol utes to diesel. And so I spent several years going to Japan, buying engines and parts, and we did that from my home here for several years. And that was also a very interesting business, with travel, high stress business, but you know, they all are.
Were you buying new stuff, used stuff?
No, mainly second-hand stuff from wreckers. Good quality stuff, you know. We learned a bit about it the first year, but the better you bought, the better you did out of it. But, yeah. the old Nissan LD28, which is a six-cylinder thing. Hundreds of irrigators throughout the country probably still run on them. Yes. And school buses were converted from petrol to these engines, and we imported over 200 of them alone.
Yeah, I don't know whether you remember, Jim Frogley used to have a plane, Avro 626.
I remember it well. Avro Annie. Yeah, I do remember it. And I saw it fly. It flew illegally. I think Jim flew it, actually, didn't he?
Yes.
But anyway, I remember going out to Jim's hangar and workshop, and it sat there gathering dust for many years after, and I believe he sold it to the museum in Ohakia, and perhaps it's still there.
It went to Wigram, eventually.
Yeah, what an aeroplane that was. Yeah.
Yes, an amazing plane. Frogley's were our neighbours. Yeah, it was young Jim, of course. He's just sold his Beaver.
Has he?
Yes, he's retired.
Well,
he's had a fairly charmed life.
He has, yeah.
And when you think back to the people that were flying at Bridge Power, Temple Martin.
Temple Martin was a character, yeah. And of course all the top dressing pilots, Derek Turnbull.
I interviewed Ray Turnbull recently. He was the youngest.
Yeah.
And he was also a top dresser.
Yeah. But Bob Fleming, still down there. The ones that I used to go with, Dick Beattie was probably one of the most famous. Alan Condon, Patterson.
Alan Seavers.
I saw a guy in the picture in the paper of the three old guys, Curry. Now, I remember a Pommy guy that was a stock agent, Curry, and I think that's the man in question.
Curry.
Alan Seavers was the manager of Wrightson's, but the reason of quite a lot of my success at farming was because of Alan Seavers. He was a good farmer, a good manager, and a good lender of money, and I hope a good judge of character.
Yes,
because he used to give me some massive stock overdrafts when I needed it. I didn't have any money. So, no, he was a great influence to me, Alan Seavers.
He probably knew that you'd pay him back.
Yeah.
You've sort of had what I'd call a mixed life, but they've all been very successful, haven't they?
We've been pretty lucky that we haven't had one that's been really bad. No, you know, we've had some bad days, but we didn't really have any super bad years.
Never had kiwi fruit, have you?
Never had kiwi fruit, no. I've had grapes and apples, yeah. And we've grown, used to grow maize when I first bought all this land.
That's
maize was...
Yes.
I had over 100 acres of maize several years going, and I sold the grain directly to Keeley's Poultry Farm. Several of the poultry farmers bought direct off me. Yeah, we were growing maize. I think I grew the best crop of maize in the district here on this property. One year, 5.5 tonne or something to the acre. Now they do more than that, but in those days it was good.
Machinery was quite cheap when you look back on it those days.
Well, I could buy a new hay baler and a new tractor. The tractor was $2,850 the first year of very small currency. So $2,850 for a new 990, and the baler was about $2,800 or $3,200, I think it was, it was brand new, and you could pay for it in the season and still live off it. So, you know, your outlay wasn't as much as a tractor. Now you spend 3 years paying it off.
Someone said to me, "No, all we do is refinance, just use the one we've got as a deposit."
Yeah.
Now, you haven't told me when and where you met Liz, where she was from.
Well, I think it was at the Junior National Party dance, it probably was.
In Warren Street, Hastings.
Well, Hastings and Napier,
yes.
We used to go to the dances. And, of course, those days was the Bachelors and Spinsters dances. Fernhill, Pukitap, Miani, Sheridan, Partaker. And that's where we met, at one of those dances. Liz was at Woodford House. No, she went to Iona. My daughter went to Woodford. I think we got married in 64 and we're still together and brought two kids up. Got a boy 53 and a girl 50.
What are their names and what do they do now?
My daughter's Wendy Morrison Patterson, and she is housewife, and her husband's a lecturer at the Polytech in Tauranga, and they've got a trailer business, and they've got twins, 14-year-old twins. And my son, he's got a 14-year-old daughter and a 12-year-old son, and they've split up, him and his wife. He lives at Mohawka, and he sells inflatable boats, and he's got a business doing that.
Now, what do you do for a hobby? besides flying?
Well, I'm fortunate enough to have bought a beautiful boat. I've got a stunning boat, and I decided at 75 I was getting pretty old. I didn't want to do anything I'd done in my life before, and that's almost everything. So I went over to Europe and bought this super yacht, and I bought it back during the first year. We had it in Tarragona on the Mediterranean coast, and we sailed it to La Palma in Mallorca, put it on the slip there and painted the bottom and loaded all. This boat was amazing. I bought it with everything that went with it was the instructions. And I didn't realise how much stuff actually went with the boat. So there was container loads of stuff. And when we bought the boat back, it came back on a big transporter. And we filled all the cabins and stuff up with furniture and art and all the stuff that came with the deal. And that's been the most interesting thing I've ever done in my life. I've got it in Napier now. And we don't sail on it a lot, but we go down South Island each January for a few weeks. And enjoy the beautiful Melbourne Queen Charlotte Sounds, and we just do the odd day trip here. I've got a very nice berth in Napier. I go in for an hour or two every day, have lunch on board, there's always something to do. And so that's probably my hobby now.
How big is your boat?
It's 105 feet.
It's a cruiser.
It's a ship.
It is a ship. So what sort of beam would that have?
It's 105 feet by 35 feet.
That's huge.
It's pretty huge.
That's amazing. You know, it's best to have done things than have sat there and thought about doing them, isn't it?
Well, this was amazing, bringing this big ship back. I bought it off an entrepreneur in Malta, Englishman, a music man, and he's probably the most colourful man I've ever met. I bought it from Spain, the most corrupt country in the world, on a transporter, without a lawyer. And I got it back tied up to the port of Napier, and we never had a hassle.
But I mean, you've been through the traps, haven't you?
Yeah,
not
done
stupid.
That. Yeah. But it was built for the Kuwaiti royal family. It's a stunning boat. It was built in the 80s, in the opulent years of the boom of oil and stuff. So the boat is in beautiful condition. It's still one of the fastest yachts on the Mediterranean. It'll do 31 knots.
That's
got 4,000 horsepower. It's got two big V12 MTU engines, just stunning.
So you load it by the ton?
We buy fuel, yeah. Always used to buy fuel by the gallon, then the litre, now we buy it by the ton. But I don't regret a bit of fuel in it. It's lovely. And it's beautifully got out. It's got 24-karat gold in all the drapes. Georgian wine cooler. It's amazing, all the Russian crystal glass that came with it. The wine collection, the vintage stuff, the artwork, it's just a beautiful thing to own.
And you've got a permanent mooring in Napier.
Right, where the, down from the bar, you know, Napier. The corner there, right, the fishing wharf is. That's my boat there. Mm. So, well, and all the toys it's got.
But I mean, if you go down to the Sounds every year, you don't have to use it for 6 months of the year.
No, this is true. People say you don't use it much, but, you know, we go away for 3 weeks and we do 80 or 90 hours on the main engines and probably 200 or 300 on the gen sets. It's what most people would only use in a year in any case.
Do you need a captain's ticket?
I don't. Private boat, it's quite amazing. I can drive it myself, but I choose not to. It took me a year to learn to operate the boat, but I bring the captain that's been a captain on it for 30 years, nearly all its life he's been the captain. He's an Englishman. And I bring him out, I've brought him out 4 times now in England, and we've learnt the whole boat really from him. So he comes out for a month holiday each year in January, so he drives the boat, and I've got a New Zealand captain that normally comes along to assist, and he's a very good cook, so it all works out pretty good. Yeah.
Well, there's a reward for effort in life, isn't there?
Yeah.
And, you know, when you look back and think of all the times you sat on a bumpy tractor and the noise and the dust.
God, Frank, all those, no air conditioning, no power steering.
Although
my bailing years, I bailed a million bales. And hill work too, steep hills. The Bartok and that used to do it pretty steep, didn't they? Whatever the man could cut, we used to bail. And hay baler pushing you down a hill's not always much fun either. But we had a few incidents, but not too bad.
Fortunately.
Yeah. Well, Frank Hooper used to mow a lot of stuff here. Yeah. He mowed, like, when I took over Parkatoot, anything north of Puketetri, The local contractor was absolutely hopeless with bad gear, so I ended up doing the whole lot.
I forget his name now.
Kelly.
Yeah, it was Kelly.
Well, I went up there and I didn't need much extra work because I was doing all the Hartree stuff, Tom
yes.
Hartree. Then, next thing, I did all Puketetri. You know, geez, that was a long way. And I'd go up there for the day, work 20 hours and drive back for Lucerne the next day down here. And when I started, the swing bridge was here, remember? So we used to have to go around Redcliffe to get over the bridge. Yeah. But anyway, I enjoyed doing that in a way too.
Gosh, Tom Hartree's a nice man.
Isn't he? Great guy, Tom.
Gentleman.
Yeah. They're doing a good job there. They always have done. Never been too short of money. Always done it properly. And never branched out to, you know, they always bought a new tractor every few years. But they were good operators and a big family of them.
All barefoot boys.
Yeah.
We used to have a man who used to stay with us on the farm and do some painting and cooking for us at home. His name was Fred Hemmingston. He used to go and look for the Hartrees for 3 months a year.
What was his name?
Fred Hemmingston. 6 weeks ago, I got the phone book. There's a T. Hartree. Rang him up and I said, does the name Fred Hemmingston mean anything to you? He said, as children, we used to think he was marvellous. He used to come up and stay with us. Isn't it amazing how these links...
Well, the Hartrees, they're real characters. Old Jack was a character, so was Boss. And, you know, they were pioneers up here.
Absolutely.
And I remember when I first went to Partoka as a teenager, started driving tractors for Gordon Mulder, the rabbits were the problem. People wouldn't believe how thick the rabbits were. Mm. Until Halliwell up there, Maurice Halliwell, invented the jam gun. So in the early days, we used to do miles of rabbiting. We'd have a spade and a paintbrush or a tablespoon on a pole with a bit of tape around it so you didn't have to bend down. And the guy would walk along with, and take a bit off the top of the grass and tip it over. And the jam man behind would have the spoon with the jam, gallon of jam, and put a dob on the... After 3 days, you put the poison in the jam. But anyway, Halliwell up there, Maurice, invented the gun that did it all in one hand, like a big grease gun
it was.
So that was Maurice Halliwell that made that. And they got control of the rabbits after a few years, and with giant disking, knocking the scrub down, English grasses and fertiliser, Partoka just boomed.
And yes, it was all red clover country, wasn't it?
Oh, some of it was beautiful. It used to blow, though, when, you know, you giant disc it and that, if they got it the wrong time. I've seen the ploughing blow away, so 6 or 7 inches gone.
Yeah.
It'd sandblast all the posts on the fencing, and it probably still would, but now I think they chemically treat the ground and then oversow and things like that, so they don't chop it up like we used to.
So, coming back to your retirement and spending some time flying around the world in your simulator, visiting your yacht and going away each year in it, do you have any other bad habits?
Well, I've travelled. My wife and I have travelled. Most years we would travel somewhere, if not 2 or 3 times. So we've been around Europe a few times, and often to America, Hawaii, the Pacific Islands, Asia. I've been all around the Mediterranean, Africa. So yeah, I've spent a lot of time travelling in between things. Well, Liz and I have, so we still travel perhaps 2 or 3 times a year, just briefly.
Well, so your orcharding and grape operation, you have a manager doing?
In those days, I was pretty hands-on myself in orcharding, and I'd do all the weed spraying and all the work in the night time because I didn't have... But I had an orchard manager, Lance. He stayed with me 20-odd years. But another hobby I did when I was pretty young in life, I started finding old vintage engines and doing them up. And I did about 20 of them, and I just sold them to a collector just 2 or 3 when I bought my boat. And I just didn't have room for them anymore and passed it. So I had a very nice vintage collection that is still in a museum. So that was another hobby for a few years.
I see you've got a man working out on the David Brown and the...
I've always had a handyman or a mechanic or something, and we've always run a workshop, but now I just have an old friend that's worked with me for many years. He comes 3 times a week, half a day, and he mainly mows the lawns. But just in the last month or two, we've been still looking after sections on our subdivision.
So where is the subdivision?
I'll just take you down and show you in a minute. and we've got a big garden, and I've got a big veggie garden.
You've actually got a park.
Yeah, I suppose so. We did a big cut down last year, and a lot of the trees are getting big and old, and so we culled trees that were too close to the house, and so we ended up with 27 bins of firewood out of it, so that was good. And some of the trees, well, the redwood at the gate now is a colossal sized tree, and I was an old man when I planted it, 40 when I planted it. Now it's that big, isn't it? Yeah, biggest tree.
At the height of your owning land around here, how many acres of orchard and vineyard did you have?
I don't know. It wasn't important to me to have so many acres. It was just I'd buy the neighbour out, perhaps, and develop it. Normally bare land, and then we'd develop it into orcharding and sell it when things were good. And I did several, which I'll show you.
Well, Tony has just brought me back from a tour of Motio, where he's had his interests in the last 40 years. Tony, thank you very much for allowing me to come and tape this for Hawke's Bay History.
Good, Frank. I that little bit of history that in my period of time living in the district goes forward, and places grow like Apley Road. When I was a child, there were 7 families on Apley Road. Now there's 40. And the whole district is... I don't even know who my neighbours are nowadays.
Okay, well, thank you.